Chapter 85. Zack sat comfortably at the head of the thick wooden table positioned in the center of the great cabin. A flickering candle lantern on the table illuminated a large leather-bound book pushed to one side. In front of Zack was stacked a pile of glass plates, each the size of a large postcard. Lying a few inches from his right hand was his Glock pistol. "A rather remarkable old ship," Zack said, "with an interesting record of documentation." "The Erebus came very close to being the first to navigate the Northwest Passage, Clay," Pitt replied. Zack's brow rose a fraction at the mention of his name. "I see you've done your homework. Not surprising, I suppose. You are quite an accomplished man, I have learned, and rather dogged in the chase." Pitt stared at Zack, angry with himself for not bringing the percussion cap pistol. With an injured arm and no weapon, he was nearly helpless against the assassin. Perhaps if he could stall for time, Giordino would come looking armed with his shotgun. "I'm afraid that all I know about Clay Zack is that he is a lousy janitor and enjoys murdering innocent people," Pitt said coldly. "Joy doesn't enter into it. A necessity of business, you might say. And exactly what business of yours requires ruthenium at any cost?" Pitt asked. Zack flashed a humorless grin. "It is little more than a shiny medal to me, but it is worth much more to my employer, and it is obviously of strategic value to your country. If one were to prevent the mineral from feeding your artificial photosynthesis factories, then my employer continues to be a very rich man. If he can control the supply of ruthenium outright, then he becomes an even richer man. Mitchell Goyette has more money than he could ever hope to spend, yet his pathological greed outweighs the potential benefit to millions of people around the world." "A sentimentalist, eh?" Zack said with a laugh. "A sure sign of weakness." Pitt ignored the comment, still stalling for time. Zack didn't seem to notice or care that the gunfire above deck had ceased. Perhaps he assumed that Giordino had been killed. "A pity that the ruthenium is but a myth," Pitt said. "It would appear that both of our efforts have been in vain." "You searched the ship?" Pitt nodded. "There's nothing here." "A clever deduction that the Inuit ore had come off a ship. How did you rationalize that? I was searching for a mine on the island." "The records that you neglected to steal from the miners' co-op referred to the ore as Black Kobluna. The name and dates matched up to Franklin's ship Erebus, but it was a wrong assumption on my part." Pitt lied. "Ah, yes, that decrepit miners' co-op. Apparently they obtained all the ruthenium that was aboard." "And it was aboard," he added with a penetrating gaze. Zack picked up one of the glass plates and slid it across the table. Pitt picked it up and studied it under the candlelight. It was a daguerreotype, the output of an early photographic process whereby an image was captured on a polished silver surface, then encased in glass for protection. Pitt recalled Perlmutter mentioning that Franklin had carried a daguerreotype camera aboard the expedition. The exposed plate showed a group of Erebus crewmen hauling a number of heavy sacks aboard that bulged as if loaded with rocks. A glimpse of the horizon behind the ship showed an ice-covered terrain, indicating that the ore had been taken aboard somewhere in the Arctic. "You were quite right in your assumption," Zack said. "The ore was aboard the ship. Which leaves the question as to where it was mined." He reached over and patted the leather book near the center of the table. "The captain was kind enough to leave the ship's logbook aboard," he said smugly. "The source of the ruthenium would be recorded inside." "What do you think this book is worth, Mr. Pitt? $1 billion? Pitt shook his head. "Not the lives that it has already cost." "Or the lives that it is about to cost," Zack added with a twisted grin. Beyond the thick timbers of the ship's hull, the sound of automatic gunfire suddenly erupted, but the noise was oddly distant. It was clearly too far away to be directed at the ship, and there was no return fire from Giordino above deck. There were also two distinct tones of fire, representing different types of weaponry. Somewhere out on the ice, a pitched battle was going on between unknown parties. Under the dim light of the cabin, Pitt could detect a subtle look of concern cross Zack's face. There was no sign of Giordino, but the wheels of determination in Pitt's head had finally derived an alternative game plan. Though he felt faint from loss of blood, he knew the time to act was now. He might not get another chance. He stood back a bit and lowered the glass plate as if he was done studying it. Then he casually flipped it back toward Zack, or at least attempted to make it look casual. But instead of sliding it across the table, he flung it sharply a few inches above the surface. And rather than aiming for Zack, he whipped it toward the candle lantern in the center of the table. The heavy glass plate easily smashed through the side of the lantern, scattering glass shards across the table. But of more importance to Pitt, the plate knocked debris across the candle wick, extinguishing the short flame that burned inside. In an instant, the great cabin plunged into total darkness. As the plate struck the lantern, Pitt was already on the move. He immediately dropped to the deck, falling to one knee behind the end of the table. Zack was not a fool, however. The professional assassin had his hand on the gun even before the candle flickered out. He quickly raised the gun and fired at the opposite end of the table. The bullet flew harmlessly over Pitt's head. Ignoring the shot, he placed his hands on the two stubby table legs beside him and started shoving the table toward Zack. The assassin fired two more shots, using the muzzle flash to try to locate Pitt in the black room. Realizing Pitt was shoving the table forward, he fired at the far tabletop while trying to rise from his seat. His aim was dead on, but his move to stand was too slow. A short seam of bullets struck the tabletop inches from Pitt's head, but the thick mahogany surface devoured the lead slugs. Protected by the hard wood, Pitt propelled the table with rising momentum. Driving against the wooden legs, he bulled forward with every ounce of energy he could muster, ignoring the ache in his arm and the dizziness in his head. The far edge of the table caught Zack in his midsection, throwing him back into his chair before he could get to his feet. The pile of glass plates dumped on top of him, disrupting his attempts to keep firing. Pitt continued to drive his rectangular battering ram, which now took Zack with it, sliding him backward in his chair. Both bits of furniture slid several feet until the rear legs of the chair struck an uneven deck plank. The legs held while the table kept coming, knocking Zack over and backward, where he fell to the deck with a crash. In his hand, the Glock still barked, firing harmlessly into the tabletop, even as Zack tumbled over. Pitt heard the crash, but it was only through the brief muzzle flash that he knew Zack was knocked down. He was now exposed to Zack's fire from under the table, but he didn't hesitate, even as he heard the gun discharge again. Digging his shoulder into the underside of the table, Pitt drove his legs into the deck and pushed upright with his last burst of strength, tilting the burly table up on its end until it landed on Zack's legs. Pitt nearly had the table turned over when he felt his left leg buckle from under him. Lying on his back, Zack had fired three blind shots under the table, then slid his legs free. Two rounds whizzed by harmlessly, but the third found Pitt's leg, burying the bullet into his thigh. Losing his balance, Pitt quickly shifted his weight onto his right leg and leaned into the table. He was a second too late. Zack had got to his knees and deflected the table to the side, shifting Pitt's momentum. As the massive table began to totter, Zack rose and used his superior strength to twist it aside. Suddenly lacking in leverage, Pitt was thrown sideways with the table, crashing into the bookshelves in the stern. The sound of shattering glass filled the darkened bay as Pitt was flung into the paned shelf doors. He then dropped to the deck, followed by the hefty table that collapsed onto him with a dull thud. The table ripped through a half dozen bookshelves along the way, releasing a cascade of books and wooden shelves and glass that tumbled on top of the overturned table. Zack stood nearby, breathing heavily as he caught his wind, while keeping the gun pointed at the table. But straining his ears, he heard not a sound. There were no groans, no shuffles or movements at all from Pitt's buried body. As his eyes adjusted to the darkness, Zack could faintly detect Pitt's lifeless legs protruding from beneath the table. Scouring the floor around his own feet, he put his hands on the heavy ship's logbook. Pulling it to his chest, he stepped cautiously toward the lighted passageway, then moved slowly down the corridor without looking back.